All right. Welcome back to another episode of Nacho Average Sports, episode 3 on Anchor. We really out here, though, and we appreciate you for tuning in. You know, as we like to say on our other podcasts, that might take a little while to get to your ears. It's a protracted struggle, you know. Life is life, you know. Sometimes you got some things that happen, deter your focus, might set back your goals by a second or two, but you know, ultimately, if you complete that shit, you feel good. So we're gonna go into this episode 3 with positive vibes and bright spirits, and we're gonna let you know what's on the docket, what has been happening in the sports world, what some bizarre ass shit, and maybe just some regular shit that, you know, you already assumed would happen. But you know, we have the pillars. We got 9 pillars in this show. If you aren't familiar with the pillars of our show already, we'll break them down real fast. We have In the Paint, and that's our current event section. We have The Lost Art of the Mid-Range Jumper, that's our historical section. We have Beyond the Arc, which is kind of like a mix of pop culture and sports, you know. We have our Out of Left Field, which is the kind of bizarre stuff that we didn't see coming. We have the Mendoza line, which is who is disappointing in sports. And we have our Hail Mary, who's desperate. And our Hole in One, who's killing it. And lastly, Hat Trick, which is basically just an assortment of 3 things that we want to list or make connections to. And lastly, of course, our goals for the next show, looking ahead. So let's jump right into it. We are recording here in Brooklyn, New York. We are chilling like a villain. You know, we got the music outside, got the buses. So, you know, shout out to Anchor, though, because I think that they've been upgrading their bit in terms of audio, accuracy and how good this stuff sounds just recording it over the phone. So real big shout out to Anchor. We also want to really thank Anchor for connecting our podcast, this one you're listening to Castbox, Pocket Cast, and also Radio Public. And Radio Public is, you know, something we really, really encourage and highly believe in, because they believe in us, they believe in podcasters, they believe in podcasters being paid for their work, regardless of how many listeners we have or how many episodes we have. And I'm with that, man. That's a movement. Podcasting is a movement. There's so many incredible podcasts out there. There's almost too many to listen to. But, you know, the fact that we have this independence to creating our own radio is something I've always cherished for years, ever since I was a teenager getting into audio. And, you know, with the... with everything that's happening around net neutrality, you know, I think even more emphasis should be put on the importance of, you know, free radio by the people for the people. So we're going to jump into our first pillar of this episode, In the Paint, what's currently happening. And for this one, we actually are going to change the moniker a little bit and consider it more of In the Ring, if you will. With the news that Triple G and Canelo Alvarez, the rematch is set for September 15th. And we hope here at Nacho Average Sports that Adelaide Byrd won't be judging that fight. We definitely advocate for women judges in boxing, but whether you're male or female, you need to know what fight you're watching. And the fact that Adelaide Byrd, her scorecard was so bizarrely in favor of Canelo Alvarez, who, by all popular judgment, lost to Triple G, it totally threw off the legitimacy of that fight. So, suffice it to say, we hope maybe there's another woman judge at that fight, but let's just hope it's not Adelaide Byrd, because the fans deserve better, and Triple G deserves better, especially if he's not even getting 50-50 split on this fight. Canelo Alvarez is getting the bigger chunk of this fight for the second time in a row, despite not being you know, he's a bigger draw, he's a bigger pull, he's a younger fighter, more well-known, more well-established, but Triple G is the guy that everybody knows, in his, you know, knockout artist, Iron Fist. So we'll see what happens in September. Definitely looking forward to that. We're going to head into our historical section because we have a lot more content there for this show. So the lost art of the mid-range jumper, we're actually going to start with looking back at, we were inspired recently to rewatch game one of the 2001 NBA Finals. And that's the game where notoriously Allen Iverson stepped over Tyronn Lue after hitting what would be a mid-range jumper. And if you don't follow us on Twitter for Nacho Average Sports, definitely check us out at Nacho Podcasts. You can check out all the stuff we're tweeting about, retweeting about sports. And we're going to just go over this little thread since, you know, you could definitely check it out on Twitter, of course. But we might as well just kind of break it down for you, for the listeners. Rewatching the game, obviously over a period of time. Like I just said earlier, life is life. We weren't able to watch it all at once. But, you know, we have our own film study sessions over here. We're breaking down film just like the pros. And, you know, what was amazing is that Allen Iverson had 30 points in the first half of that game. And up until that point at halftime, he had scored 100 points over his last seven quarters, which was just out of this world. You had the OG referees, Dick Pavetta and Joey Crawford, reffing that game. What a classic. You had a young Speedy Claxton in street clothes on the bench for Philly. You know, when Derek Fisher fouls Eric Snow on the and one, which I believe is in the third quarter, that's what spurs Phil Jackson to sub in Tyronn Lue. And you have, I believe, on the call, you have Marv Albert and, who's that guy, Collins, who used to coach the Bulls and MJ before Phil Jackson did. They were the announcers. And Collins talks about how Phil Jackson, before the playoffs, chose Tyronn Lue as a guard to be on the bench, as opposed to J.R. Ryder, who you also see in street clothes on the Lakers bench. And yes, Tyronn Lue enters with 5 minutes and 22 seconds left in the third, and he becomes a spark plug. I mean, the Lakers were down by maybe 12 points or something, close to 15, and Lue just, you know, obviously he's feeding Shaq and all that, but because he had been in practice basically simulating what Iverson did leading up to the finals, I mean, as the commentators are saying in that game, he felt like he was playing like Iverson. He's in the passing lanes, disrupting the Philly's offense, getting steals, leading to the fast break, getting assists, getting layups. You also see my man Ja Rule in the crowd, courtside, when back in his heyday. You spot him behind Rick Fox standing on the sideline. And then, you know, part of, you know, the people that we were, you know, seeing and taking inventory of, you had Matt Geiger, who was backing up Dikembe Mutombo. And Mutombo was a midseason acquisition that, you know, I think really took that Philly team over the hump in terms of getting through the Eastern Conference and into the finals. So you had Mutombo starting, you had Matt Geiger, who was their offensive guy. And that right wing baseline jumper was Matt Geiger's go-to shot. And then the third center, though, known better for maybe being posterized by Kobe Bryant the following year as a New Jersey Net, and as the Philadelphia 76er in 01, just getting slammed and dunked on by Shaquille O'Neal left and right, is Todd McCullough. Poor Todd McCullough. he was not treated nicely by the Lakers 2 years in a row. But and another thing we took inventory of, if you're a real Philly Sixers fan out there, George Lynch, man, I think he was hurt to start this series because he's in street clothes in game one. And to me, George Lynch was like, maybe not on the same level, but he was almost like what Andre Iguodala is to the Warriors as that sixth man. George Lynch really was that guy for the Sixers. And to not have him, I think, played a big role. I think the Lakers would have won that series, but maybe it goes six if George Lynch is healthier. But we want to give a shout out also to another podcast, Canel and Bell, who we've been in touch with, minimally, just, you know, as we do over Twitter and Instagram. But big shout out to Raja Bell, who's a co-host on that show, and who Raja Bell earned a 10-day contract in 2001 with that Philadelphia 76ers team. He then came up huge in Game 7 against the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then he's putting in work in Game 1. And that's when really he starts that feud with Kobe. Obviously, you know, when he's on the Phoenix Suns and those D'Antoni teams with Amari Stoudemire and Steve Nash, he took Kobe to task when he clotheslined him. But, you know, that Kobe-Raja Bell feud starts in 01 in that Game 1 of the NBA Finals. And Raja Bell hits a clutch layup against Robert Horry in overtime when Philly was down by 5 or so with just under 2.5 minutes to play. And that was the clutch moment, because then Iverson gets it going again after being cold. And yeah, he hits that shot over Tyron. What was amazing is that the Lakers, you know, were undefeated going into that Game 1 of the Finals in the playoffs. They had swept Portland, they had swept Sacramento in the second round, then they swept San Antonio in the Western Conference Finals. And they hadn't lost at home at the Staples Center since April 3rd of that year, which coincidentally was my 11th birthday. And coincidentally, they had lost to my favorite team at the time, who I still have a deep, deep soft spot, is the New York Knicks. But those Knicks, those were my squad, man, with Chris Childs and Charlie Ward as the point guards. You had Allen Houston as a shooting guard, Latrell Sprewell, small forward, Marcus Cambia, power forward. The list goes on. But going back to this game, when that iconic shot happens and Allen Iverson hits the mid-range jumper and he crosses over and he hits Lou with that shot and then steps over him with 47.6 seconds left in overtime, and Iverson had then at that point scored 7 straight to take the lead. And then Eric Snow's floater was the dagger against Kobe for that game. It's really one of the greatest game ones ever, and it ended the Lakers 19 game win streak at that time. Then of course the Lakers won 4 straight. The rest is history. But you know, we love looking back and seeing vintage basketball classics. And even though they didn't win, you know, the series, Philly, that game goes down all time. I mean, that's Iverson's only appearance in the finals, but he put on a masterful performance. AI was our guy. The answer, man, growing up, I had the answers, you know, playing AAU basketball, you know, wore them, you know, religiously. AI was the man, you know, got braids because of AI, you know. You know, try to wear like an arm sleeve and all that, you know, the swagger. So big shout out. And, you know, Iverson's still doing his thing. And we still, you know, we trust the process for the Sixers. And we'll get more to that later down the road, as the Sixers have been in the news recently. Also, if you've been, you frequent ESPN.com like we do, they've had a lot of on this date, you know, obviously since the finals have just ended. You go back to 97-98 when Jordan was hitting all those shots against the Jazz to win finals games. And also Steve Kerr hit a big shot in Game 6 of the 97 finals to essentially close out that series. Now Steve Kerr, man, shout out to him too. You know, in this historical section of our podcast, he has 5 rings as a player and now 3 as a coach. He has 8 rings total. No one can ever take that away from him. And, you know, someone who... Obviously, Steve Kerr had a big part in helping, you know, to mentor his game this year, facilitate his progression and integration onto the team of the Golden State Warriors, especially while Stephen Curry was hurt, was Quinn Cook. And, you know, we did some research. We saw an article during the finals, which really illuminated Quinn Cook's journey. And we consider this part of the historical section of the podcast because, you know, it's Quinn Cook's history in the league, which, albeit short, he's bounced around a lot. And now, you know, like Steph Curry said, when you bring up his name, you remember he's a champion, you know. And what's amazing is, you know, I remember Quinn Cook at Duke. definitely. He played with Steph Curry's brother, Seth Curry. So I believe that's how they already kind of had a relationship before they were ever teammates in Golden State. But what's interesting is that Quinn Cook started on the Cavaliers in the league. And the Cavaliers tried Jared Cunningham at guard and Jordan McRae and DeAndre Liggins. They even drafted Kay Felder instead of giving a roster spot to Quinn Cook, who was on their D-League team at the time. And only two of those players who I just mentioned, Jared Cunningham, Jordan McRae, DeAndre Liggins, and Kay Felder are in the NBA. Oh, and including Quinn Cook. And Quinn Cook is the only one who now is a champion out of all those cats. He was never able to crack the Cavs roster since he signed on during the training camp in 2015. He was passed over by all the players mentioned above and including Dante Jones during his two seasons with the Charge, which was the G League team. Despite the fact that he was the G League Rookie of the Year in 2015-2016. And, you know, Cook's family on his dad's side lives in Canton and Cleveland, apparently. And obviously, you know, it's well storied and noted that Quinn Cook's dad passed away this year. I think that he was playing with, you know, a lot of honor and let's say chip on his shoulder, for lack of a better term, in terms of what he was playing for. He was playing basketball, obviously, on a championship level team, but personally he was playing for something bigger than himself. And obviously he was very emotional when he won his ring this year, you know, and his, you know, for his dad not to be there, but his dad is with him in spirit. We here on the show can definitely sympathize with losing a parent. Lost my mother 11 years ago, you know, but we definitely every day try to do something that is inspired by our parents, that is for them, that would make them proud. And I believe Quinn Cook has definitely made his father proud as he looks down on him from heaven. And as Quinn Cook was quoted as saying, you know, he was always going to be grateful for Cleveland because they are the one who gave him his first opportunity. Quinn Cook also wound up being the 2017 G League All-Star MVP. And as Tyronn Lue has been quoted as saying, he thought he was a good player. He always thought that Quinn Cook was a very solid player, could shoot the basketball, play the pick and roll, could run pick and roll, and that from his experience having him, he thought that David Blatt was coaching when he came into training camp, and he gave him, like Quinn Cook gave it his all during training camp, and he tried hard. Sometimes he'd make mistakes, and he was mad at certain plays, certain possessions, but overall he's a great offensive player. He can do multiple things, shoot the ball. You know, it's kind of repetitive in this quote, honestly. Shoot off the dribble, though, and had some speed and good pace to his game. So, you know, we want to give a big shout out to Quinn Cook. We're a big fan of Quinn Cook, and he's a champion. So don't ever forget it, and we look forward to what he's going to do with the Warriors next year. Moving on to our Beyond the Arc section, one name really comes to mind when we think Beyond the Arc, especially as it relates to the NBA Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals, and his name is Klay Thompson. You might know him as China Klay. You may know him recently as Elimination Klay, because in Game 6s, whether it was against the OKC Thunder in 2016, which ousted Kevin Durant's Thunder at the time, or Game 6 against Houston, when both times the Warriors' seasons were on the line, Klay just goes bonkers. He goes just unconscious, ballistic. He's shooting trays like butter. You know, in 2016, it's when he hit 11 threes. This year, he hit 9 threes in Game 6 elimination game. And the reason we bring him up is because it's been noted in the news that his father, Michael Thompson, former LA Laker, has suggested that he doesn't expect his son to resolve his future this particular offseason in terms of signing an extension. And that probably goes the same for Draymond Green. So expect both those players to kind of relax this summer and come back to the talking and the negotiation table for contractual extensions next year, when it's probably going to be more lucrative. And we'll see how the Warriors deal with that. Of course, next year is the last year that the Warriors will be playing in Oakland before they move to San Francisco in the Chase Center. So, you know, and Klay and Draymond, I think, out of the two guys out of anybody else on the team really, really are down for Oakland. Like, really, you know, understand the importance of playing basketball in Oakland for the fan base that has been loyal to the Warriors for decades. So when they move to San Francisco, it's going to be a tough pill to swallow. For me personally, you know, I'm an East Bay kid, born and raised, Berkeley, Oakland, 510. You know, and I fuck with, you know, Sucker Free City. You know, I went to SF State, yada yada. But, you know, that bougie shit isn't really for me. The Chase Center, I haven't been able to see the Warriors live at Oracle in 3 years. And let alone when they come to Brooklyn, man. I used to be able to go to see them against the Nets. The last 2 years, I can't afford that shit, ever since KD came aboard. But, yeah, man. Klay Thompson, though, big shout out to him. We'll see what happens in the future with that, and we'll see what happens when he goes back to China this summer. I'm sure there's gonna be a lot more entertainment to come. Hashtag Anta. And you know, like we said, we mentioned the Sixers just a moment ago. They've been in the news at this point now. It's old news, perhaps, but bizarre news nonetheless. Bizarre history nonetheless. Burnergate. Have you seen this? Have you heard about that? We're actually gonna conflate out of left field with the Mendoza line, because the most disappointing person in sports in the last week or two has been Brian Colangelo, former GM of the Sixers, son of Jerry Colangelo, who runs USA Basketball, et cetera, confidant of Commissioner Adam Silver. But Brian Colangelo, man, he could not stand the fact that Philly fans were still about trusting the process, and the process that was built by Sam Hinkie. There's an incredible article of a guy that was like a technician, or, you know, one of the construction workers who was helping to build the new facility that the Sixers have, the training facility. And you can't, you know, unless you open up the outlets or go really deep into the infrastructure of the building, you won't be able to find this. But he took pictures throughout his process where there's little notes everywhere in that whole facility that say either trust the process or Hinkie died for this. And it's amazing, because that's low-key spooky. The ghost of Sam Hinkie still lingers in the 76ers training facility. Quite amazing, if you ask me. And what's amazing, I think, which I didn't even dawn on me, you know, shout out to Game of Zones. Been a Game of Zones fan since day one. But, you know, besides the fact that, you know, they made the cartoon comedic reference of Brian Colangelo's collars, which apparently, you know, Philly fans on Twitter were, you know, getting on him about when he had a small collar shirt, it was bad news, and when he had a big collared shirt, it was good news. The psychology of that is just bizarre. But yeah, Burnergate, if you don't know already, to specify, Brian Colangelo, the GM, basically had 5 different burner accounts on Twitter where he would, like, reply to different fans who were talking shit about him, and so that he could, like, I don't know, defend his name. It was very Trumpian of him, very fucking bizarre. Like, bro, you don't need to bother yourself with that. And then the worst part about it is he blamed it on his wife. He threw his wife under the bus. I'm like, bro, go to marriage counseling and trust the process, because that's some bullshit to do. Like, you're not even going to take heat for this shit. You're the one, like, if anything, if your wife knows about it, it's because of pillow talk, man. You're putting out Jahlil Okafor's health, you know, like the fact that he didn't pass a physical and that negated a trade that almost happened. You know, he's putting stuff out there that nobody even knew publicly through these burner accounts. I mean, it'll go down as an all-time bizarre. You know, yeah, ESPN tried to cover up and be like, there's other bizarre things that people have tweeted. This is number one. I'm sorry, Brian Colangelo, you're never gonna live this down. And I hope you never get a job in the NBA ever again. You don't deserve it. Philly was smart by, you know, even that, Philly was real nice. They're saying, oh, it was a mutual agreement to part ways. Fuck out of here. You know that they didn't want him around if they're going to pursue LeBron James in the offseason. And for that, you know, I'm a Philly fan, but, you know, I'm surprised, man. And the management really, you know, doesn't have, you know, it's almost like they don't have the gall, and at the same time, the gall to, like, not have gall, if you know what I mean. It's like, yo, man up and fire the guy, you know what I mean? And now you're gonna be like, no, like, we mutually agreed to part ways, please. Anyway, moving on, with Burnergate, a little more information here, and that we have, is that, right, he's using alternative Twitter accounts to criticize Sixers team, players, coaches, and the strategy. The Ringer, obviously, was the first to report this. And notes from that are that in February, The Ringer received anonymous tip that Brian Colangelo and the Philadelphia 76ers president of basketball operations had been secretly operating 5 Twitter accounts. Since then, The Ringer scrutinized and archived those accounts in an attempt to verify the sources' claim that the longtime NBA executive had been using them as a platform to criticize players, including Joel Embiid, Jahlil Okafor, and Nerlens Noel, publicly debate the decisions of his coaching staff, as well as critique former Sixers manager Sam Hinkie and Toronto Raptors president Masai Ujiri, because Colangelo used to be the GM of Toronto and Masai Ujiri was an assistant under him before succeeding Colangelo there. So Colangelo obviously has a lot of sour grapes towards Masai. And the something about the Telegraph, he telegraphed this 2017 trade in which the Sixers acquired the number 1 overall pick that became Markelle Fultz, right? And then he was always defending Markelle Fultz or himself in relation to Markelle Fultz from people who were talking smack about that decision to draft him as opposed to, say, Jason Tatum or anybody else in the top 5. And he was disclosing non-public medical information. You know, it's just, like, so bizarre. And the reason why we mentioned Game of Zones earlier is because Game of Zones also, you know, at the end of their season finale, you know, Brian Colangelo yells out, Hinkie, and I didn't even think about that. The anonymous tip, the anonymous source of the guy who may have provided all the data analysis on these Twitter accounts to The Ringer, because The Ringer still says that the source that provided them all this information to investigate in this story is anonymous, could be Sam Hinkie. I mean, that is something else. Sam Hinkie, despite the fact that he might be blacklisted from the NBA for, you know, being an analytics guy to the 5th degree, even though he deserves high praise, obviously I understand why the NBA doesn't appreciate teams that tank purposely, but it was a long, long game. Nevertheless, Hinkie might have really gotten back at Brian Colangelo, and maybe he's the one who's behind leaking the fact that he had all these burner accounts. Truly amazing. And so we're moving on now to someone else who's desperate in sports, our Hail Mary section. And we hate to say it because, you know, we have a lot of love for LeBron. You know, I think what's interesting is that if the Warriors hadn't peaked the way they were, maybe LeBron would be a villain in this other way that maybe we all expected. Maybe he would have won all these rings, or a majority of the rings that he went into 8 straight finals to compete for. But at this point, based on what's happened, we feel sorry for LeBron. And he's desperate. He's desperate for another championship. He's probably going to leave Cleveland. So, unfortunately, LeBron fulfills our Hail Mary portion of who's desperate in sports. When our last episode, he was killing it, you know, putting up 51 points in a game 1. But what happened, what we did not know until recently, obviously after the finals, is that after that game 1, he broke his shooting hand, punching it through a whiteboard, a blackboard, a chalkboard, some board. He, you know, that the story, I'm not bored by the story of the fact that he broke his hand, but man, poor LeBron. He played and he continued. He didn't let anybody know about the injury, or he didn't want the Warriors to know. So he played with it, man, for those next 3 games, which is, that's legendary too, not for nothing. And you know, obviously KD wound up winning the MVP 2 years in a row, Finals MVP, that is. And moving into our hole-in-one section, who's killing it in sports? Obviously, yeah, Durant, but also, you know, I think Steph. And Steph for different reasons. Steph because he started with the Warriors when he was drafted by that Don Nelson and, you know, team. I don't know if Chris Mullin was still there, but Don Nelson for short. Obviously, Curry, you know, how history, NBA history would be so different if he had been drafted one slot later by the New York Knicks, where he wanted to go, and where Mike D'Antoni, of all coaches, was there. But Don Nelson said, nope, swoop, you didn't work out for us, but I know you're going to be great. And, you know, Steph Curry stuck with the process too, you know, and he deserves all credit for being the guy who knew what it felt like to be the cellar-dwelling Warriors of old, and now to just be surreally, you know, blinged out. champion for a third time. Hole in one. Who else is killing it? Honorable mentions. Justify, the horse. Justify winning a triple crown, and getting to see that live. If you didn't tune into our last episode, we featured the homie Ben Ruffman Cohen, who has joined me in seeing two triple crowns in the last 3 years. We saw American Pharoah win it in 2015, and Justify this year at Belmont Stakes. And it's always such an electric feeling, man, when you know that the horse is coming around and he has a chance to win, and I'm just jumping up and down. And, you know, something real fast to tangent, though, is like the classism that takes place, right, in viewing sports, especially, I would say, at horse races, and especially at the Belmont. That's just my experience, is that the general seating area, it's obviously for the people who can't afford, you know, who aren't the owners, who aren't sitting in the upper deck, aren't press. All those people in the upper deck are pristine and looking down on us and enjoying their cocktails and their beverages. Meanwhile, both times I've gone, you have people who are standing on the benches for a better view, and then you have people obviously who are sitting and standing behind those people who are standing on the benches, telling them to sit down in front. And now you got people, you know, who are closest to the racetrack in the general seating area, throwing bottles, throwing popcorn. And I think about that. I think about that on a bigger version. I think that's why, you know, when I say Nacho Average Sports, and kind of the mission of this particular sports podcast is to bring, you know, how can we find intersectionality in terms of how we maneuver as a society, right? What stuck out to me as a microcosm, if you will, a metaphor, was that all the quote unquote, let's say, proletariat fans who were down there, we're all fighting amongst ourselves, man. And the elite, the 1%, the rich, they're up there, literally above us, literally looking down on us, fighting ourselves. And that wasn't lost on me. But nevertheless, you know, when the cameras came by, I was wearing my Warriors hat. It was the day after the Warriors had won the finals, and I was putting that shit up. You know, so I'm plugging the Warriors in Belmont Stakes, in Elmont, New York, Long Island. Don't let it ever be known that I don't plug the Warriors. Well, as long as they are playing in Oakland. But in 2 years, I don't know. I don't know. In 2 years, you know what I mean? I think I might have to go full-time back to my New York Knicks fandom, like when I was 9, 10 years old. But, you know, anyway, for now, I still love the Warriors and everything that they're doing. And it's going to be an exciting offseason, I think. We'll see where LeBron goes, where the chips lie after that. And our last honorable mention, we're winding down here on the episode, but shout out to Alex Ovechkin of the Washington Capitals, who won a Stanley Cup in hockey, professional National Hockey League, for the first time. He finally got Lord Stanley to fuck with him, and you know, he deserves it, man. He's probably got like one or two teeth remaining in that mouth of his, and he deserves it, you know what I mean? So shout out to Alex. And our hat trick, well, we have a note here about betting on horses, because we almost came up big, man. We almost came up big. You had some funny names too, like the 11th race at the Belmont was the main race with Justify, but there was a 12th and 13th race, and the 12th race, the winner of that was a horse named Slim Shady. And in the 13th race, we had a horse who was a 20-1 odd who we put money on, called Mr. Dougie Fresh, but we were a little too bold. We placed him to win, or we had him winning, and he placed. In horse betting, you have win, place, show, right? First, second, third, and we had him winning, and when he placed, oh, he just came up just short, and I was a little too bold on my prediction. But oh well, you know, thus is thus is the joy and the gravitational pull downward of sports betting. But obviously hat trick, we're talking hat tricks. We got to mention Cristiano Ronaldo, bruh. The World Cup is upon us. Spain and Portugal played a hell of a fucking game yesterday. And me and my boy, my roommate here, Fernandito, we were watching this shit like, yo, is he going to do it? And my man, yo, he placed that shit in the upper right fucking net of the goal. Cristiano Ronaldo with the hat trick. Shout out to that dude. And honestly, man, like, you know, I was... In contrast of Messi to Ronaldo, I've been a Messi fan, right? Like Messi is like the Steph Curry of soccer. Like, he looks like just like the regular ass dude. And Cristiano Ronaldo is definitely more like the LeBron, you know, physically built, kind of a prima donna, kind of sensitive, in all the commercials, da-da-da-da-da. But I would say since Messi lost to Germany 4 years ago in the World Cup, Cristiano Ronaldo's like honestly taking on a whole different level of his game. And like the mystique around him. And I think I have to say now, like, I'm pulling for Portugal. I'm pulling for Ronaldo this year to really pull it off and shock the world. And he deserves it. If he can cement his legacy as a World Cup champion, I think you got to give him the overall debate in terms of who wins that debate between him and Messi. So we only got one more little note here. And what we're looking forward to next week is the NBA draft. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for tuning into this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. And we may even have a special Father's Day podcast tomorrow with my father, the legendary Eddie Palmieri II, Edstradamus. So stay tuned for that. We might do a little something. Maybe talk about Kawhi Leonard to the Knicks as a possibility. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. This has been Nacho Average Sports, episode 3 on Anchor. And we'll talk to you next time. Later.